is going to go on now. Thank you. Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has had at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the big book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Pat B., a compulsive overeater from Ontario.
Thank you so much, Anne. Yes, it's been a long time since I've told my story on this meeting, my goodness. So my name's Pat, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. By recovery, it means that my sanity has been restored. I no longer use food to cope with life. Food, it is in its proper perspective. I've lost and maintained a weight loss of over 50 pounds for many years. And I live the steps as outlined in the big book of overeaters, of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the book that we use at this meeting. It's the basic text. It was the first book that was written about addiction. And other books that have been written by other 12-step groups, such as OA, are kind of comments on the original text, which was the perfect recipe for recovery. And we who use the big book say, don't mess with the recipe. If you want to produce what you've been seeing other people have, and you ask how they've achieved it, then do what they've done, because it's worked over and over and over. I've been a compulsive overeater. I don't remember not being a compulsive overeater, frankly. Probably, I know for sure, when I was 9 years old, my sister went to boarding school, because I was brought up in a small French-Canadian town in Quebec. And there were about 3,000 English Canadians there, and we were one of them. And the school, from kindergarten to grade 11, you graduated at grade 11, was about 300 kids for the whole school. And her class only had four girls in it. So the parents got together and decided to send their girls to a boarding school where they'd have more girls. But she was my protector. She was 4 years older than me. My brother was 2 years older. And he used to torment me and bully me. I asked him one time when he was older, why did he treat me like that? He said, because I could. And I thought, yeah, you could. And I can remember barricading my door, putting my bureau in front of the door, and just being terrified of him. And I think that's when I started eating, because I didn't know how else to cope with life. My parents weren't really, he didn't really do it when they were around. He was, you know, somewhere else, I don't know where, doing boy stuff. But I can still remember going and I'd come home from school and my mother might be in a different room, not in the kitchen. And I'd come in. She didn't hear me come in. And then I'd go sneak into the kitchen. I remember getting cookies. Cookies were my thing. And I would steal some cookies. And then I'd sneak out the door again. And then I'd come in loud. I'm home. And it was like, oh my gosh. I can remember just compulsively overeating, focusing only on food when I was feeling so down and feeling lonely. We lived in a place in a section of town that my friends didn't live in. And so, I'd be walking home from school alone. And but it was, I did not know that there was, that it was the way I was living was not normal. And I got married when I was 19, and that was mainly because I didn't know what else to do. And I had my first daughter, my daughter, when I was 21, and I was compulsively eating the whole time. I gained over 60 pounds with her, and the doctor never said a thing in that time. This is back in the 60s. Never said anything to me about it. And I continued to compulsively overeat after she was born. I sort of lost the weight. But I spent my whole life from when I was 9 years old, my mother put me on a diet when I was 12. And I can just remember the craziness, the yo-yo dieting, the starving, and then, not even being able to stay on a diet and comparing myself. Every time I'd go into a room, I'd look around and say, am I the fattest one in here? If I was, then I wouldn't feel, I'd leave. As long as there was one other person that was fatter than me in the room, I was okay, because then I figured everybody'd be looking at her, because I figured everybody's looking at me and saying, oh my God, the usual things on page, I don't know what page it is. Like, oh, if you just stop eating, why don't you just have a little bit? Because that's what my mother would always say. Pat, you don't have to eat all the cake. You can just eat one little piece. And I could not eat just one little piece. Once I put a piece of cake in, it was gone. It was gone. Just amazing. So I kept that up until I was 44, 1984. I was 44 because I'm 80 something now. Anyway, I remember I was now, after my kids were in school, I became a nurse. And started working at the hospital in the intensive care. I loved nursing. I was like a different person in the hospital as when I was at home, because I felt like I just knew what I was doing when I was in the hospital. I'd been trained, and I knew how to do what I was supposed to do. It was just different. Anyway, I remember the night before I came to OA, I had hurt my back at work, lifting a patient or turn, I don't know what I was doing. And I can remember I was lying on the sofa the next morning, the next day, couldn't go to work. I could hardly get up. I mean, to go get up and go to the bathroom, which was just like around the corner, was torture. And sitting on the toilet, oh my God, getting up and down off the toilet, just agony. And I had frozen vegetables, frozen peas or something on my back to try to ease the pain. And I was lying there reading. And I don't know what I was reading, just any ordinary book. I was just reading it. And I remember reading and reading and reading. And then all of a sudden that, like, there's somebody, Charles, talking about, well, Charles did this and that. I'm thinking, Charles? When did Charles come into the story? And I'm looking back, where's Charles mentioned? Charles is all in here. I never, no. Oh my goodness, way back here. Here's where Charles is introduced in this. I thought, what's wrong with me? I mean, I've been reading it. Why didn't I? And I realized I had been scanning the words every page and going down it and turning the page. And I mean, it was a murder mystery. It wasn't like anything hard. And I realized, well, I thought, well, Pat, if you haven't been thinking about that, what are you thinking about? Oh my God, no, you're not thinking about food. No, can't think about food. You can't even get up off the sofa, Pat. And I started to get up off the sofa. I said, get back on the sofa. You're not going in the kitchen. Because I knew once I started binge city. And I just thought, oh my God, no, I can't. I can't get, no, don't get. And I'm getting up the whole time. And I'm getting up and I'm agony, get back on the sofa and I'm going into the kitchen. Pat, get out of the kitchen. Do not go in the kitchen. And I'm going in the kitchen. Pat, turn around, get back on that sofa. I could not. The food was there. I was getting it out of the cupboard and making my peanut butter and jam sandwiches on white bread, which was my binge food because nobody could tell how much I'd eaten of it. And I'm screaming at myself to stop it. And I'm crying and I'm saying, please stop, stop, stop. And I could not stop. I was eating them and stuffing them in. Thank goodness it was around 11 o'clock and the kids were coming home for lunch. Finally, I could tell that they were going to be coming home. Shoved it in, put the food, put it in the garbage, and went and lay down on the sofa. I could not believe it. It was awful. I felt like it was invasion of the body snatchers. I did not want to be eating. It was the last thing I wanted to do, and I'm yelling at myself to stop, and I could not stop. Awful. Talk about insanity. That was pure insanity. Well, that night my husband came home and he said, "Well, Pat, why don't we go up to the Y? You can go in the whirlpool. Maybe the heat will help you back and stuff." So we went up, and the woman that was like in the Y to let you through into the change rooms and stuff, my husband said to her, "Ginny, you've lost a lot of weight. What did you do?" And she said, "I've stopped dieting. I realized that dieting makes me fat. And I've stopped dieting and I found that I've found a different way of eating and living." And my husband looks at me and says, "Well, that might be good for you, Pat. Why don't you try it?" Because he used to try to shame me into losing weight. He used to bribe me into losing. Nothing worked, of course, because it wasn't about him and what he could do. Anyway, I finished early and I came back out and I started talking to Ginny. And she told me that there was a program that we realized that we're addicted to certain foods. And if we stop eating them and work, and there's instructions on how to live your life without eating them, that your life will change. I thought, oh my God, really? Yeah, you don't diet, no more dieting. I thought, so she says, "I'll come and pick you up." So she took me last the next night to the meeting. And this was a very structured meeting. It's called the HOW program. Back in those days, there still is HOW, but it's not as there are certain rules that they have to follow in order to be part of OA. And one of them, so what they did was they said, okay, so they sat me down and they gave me, I don't know if any of you have seen this booklet. There's a whole bunch of booklets that have been incorporated into this one. And the first one has these 15 questions that you answer all about your habits, your food things. And I sat there and I went, I had never occurred to me that the reason I couldn't eat it, I thought I was the only one that did this. I was so shame-filled. I did not know that it actually says in here, have I ever eaten food that's burned or frozen or spoiled from containers in the grocery store? Oh yeah, Costco. Well, there was no Costco yet. But out of the garbage? Oh yeah, done all that. Are there certain foods I can't stop eating after having the first bite? These questions blew my mind. And I said, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. I don't care what it is. If I have to go hand out brochures on the street corner, I'll do it. So I was told what I had to do. I had to follow this food plan that they gave me. And they said, sugar, no sugar, no white flour. I could have other kinds of flour. Since then, I've realized that there's more stuff that I'm addicted to, but that was the start of it. Anyway, no sugar in anything. Read the labels. If it has sugar in it, you can't eat it because that's what you're addicted to and that's what's causing your insanity. And white flour turns into sugar. So it's all the same stuff. Anyway, then she says, you're going to weigh, and this is what you're going to eat. And they gave me a food plan. It was basic four, Canada's food guide, really. And they said, this is what you're going to eat. And she said, I will be your sponsor. You're going to tell me what you're going to eat before you eat it, three meals a day, nothing in between. And you're going to weigh and measure your food. I had gotten a weight, I was a lifetime member of Weight Watchers, so I had food scales, but I hadn't weighed my food for years. And she says, and you're going to come to three meetings a week. This was in person, of course, at that time. This is in 1984. And you're going to make three outreach calls a day. And they passed around a sheet. Everybody put their number on it so I could have people's phone numbers to call. And you're going to answer questions based on the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 and 12 of AA. There was no OA literature yet. That didn't come till about 1990 something. I can't remember when exactly. We had a little book, the For Today, their daily readings. That was the only thing they had. So I started. It was amazing. At first, there was a little pamphlet called Just for Today. And one of the things is just for today, I can do something for 12 hours that would appall me if I thought I had to keep it up for a lifetime. And I used to say, there was somebody else that started, we'd phone each other. All right, I can do something for half an hour that would appall me. I won't eat sugar or flour. I'm not going to eat for the next 10 minutes. I can do something for 10 minutes. So then I'd start and I'd start doing something else. Next thing you know, it's an hour and a half. And gradually that urge, that craving, as the sugar and white flour got out of my system, as I developed the habit of eating three meals a day with nothing in between and doing it one day at a time. This I joined on November the 4th, 1984. And there were Christmas parties that were started. And I said, what do I do for Christmas? Christmas is a day. What day is Christmas? Christmas is Wednesday. Okay. It's Wednesday. Doesn't matter what you're going to weigh and measure your food. It's a day like any other. Your disease does not have a holiday on Christmas or Christmas or you know, I was going to a Christmas party, an Italian seven-course meal, and she said, you're going to phone the restaurant and find out what they're serving and see what if they can make adjustments for you. So they did. They did. I instead of one little salad, little appetite, I had two of them. They came and said, so we sat down, there was pie in front of everybody. Who wants my pie? Here, take it. And how come you got two salads? Well, because I asked for them. You know, no salad dressing. And then of course the meat and the vegetables and oh, where'd you get the baked potato from? I had to call the chef and explain to him how to microwave a potato and in the microwave, a baked potato, because they had put all kinds of junk in the potato, you know, usual stuff. And then when it was dessert time, I got up and I left and I went to the hallway, and there was a payphone in the hallway, no cell phones, let me tell you. And I called my sponsor and I told her how I was doing and what was going on. And so then we talked. It was just so wonderful. And then I went back, and now it was time for tea and coffee. The food was, tables were all cleared, time for dancing. I danced up a storm. I felt so good. It was just so amazing, so amazing. And so I followed that program for 15 years. I weighed and measured and reported my food. The one thing that we did not get in the HAL program was for the HAL program, the focus was all on being abstinent, that was the purpose of the whole thing, to be abstinent. And I know now that that is not the goal. Abstinence is the basis of what we have to do. As newcomers, we have to make sure that we are abstinent, because the whole point of the program is to work the 12 steps. The 12 steps don't get you abstinent. You have to be abstinent before you start the steps. Somebody explained to me, it's kind of like the steps are the interstate. And to get up on the interstate, you need to be sober. You do not want a drunk driver on the interstate. And so the on-ramp that you're getting onto is how you get to be abstinent. And there's all kinds of tips on how to be abstinent. That big one about me saying I can do something for 12 hours that would appall me if I thought I had to keep it up for a lifetime. They said, Pat, well, what's going to happen on your birthday? Is it your birthday now, Pat? Well, no. Okay, let's not worry about it. What day is today? Today's Wednesday. Okay, what are you doing Wednesday? And so going to meetings, that first week, I went to 13 meetings. Now, some of them were mini meetings, some of them were double meetings. But I tell you, my husband, I was going out ready to go out about 3 nights. Are you going out again? I said, you want me skinny? Oh, yes, go, 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 go. So it was. Nowadays, with Zoom, oh my goodness. Nowadays, I go to about twice two meetings. I definitely go to the first meeting, which is, anyway, I'm getting ahead of my story. How much time do I have left, Suzanne? I'm going to run out of time, I know.
About 10 more minutes, Pat. We have
Okay.
10 after 8, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, 10 after 8. Okay. So what was big for me that I did not know about was the whole point of it is to have a spiritual awakening, to have a personality change that will actually, this program, if we do the steps the way they're outlined, actually produces a personality change. We find out what has been causing our insanity. We find out in step three, okay, so I can't, obviously, step one says, I can't do this. I can't control my food. It's making me crazy. Something else has to. Step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, says, okay, well, obviously, if I can't, if I don't have the power myself, something else has to. Something else has to be bigger than my power, bigger than my disease, bigger than me wanting to eat, bigger than my ego, which is what controls my disease, really. And step three says, okay, then I'm going to find something. And step two says, okay, I'm willing to see that there's something else out there that will do it. I have not made the sun and the moon. I don't make the wind blow. There's things I don't circulate my blood. I don't breathe me. Something is doing that has created me this way, has given me all kinds of character assets that I have been using wrongly. I've been using them from fear. And so step three says that made a decision to turn my will and my life, that's my thoughts and my actions, over to the care of this higher power. Oh my goodness, it took me, I was not a happy camper. When I came in and saw God is in this, I'm thinking, oh Lord Almighty, where is the door? This is a cult, get me out of here. But you know what? I stayed long enough to find out that it wasn't the God that I was taught about when I was a child. It was something within me. Deep down on it talks about this in the to the agnostic. Deep down within me, there's something here that is bigger than me, that vibrates within me. And I since then I've learned, I mean, I've spent 40 years learning about what this is all about. And I just changed. I was willing to let go of my past beliefs about what God was and become willing to just allow this power to guide me, to spend time with this power. And now, I mean, my life has changed 100%. One of the things that I love in the big book, and most those of you that have talked to me on a regular basis, is that there's the book. I don't know if you're not familiar with the big book. It starts with the doctor's opinion, which is the doctor that got Bill, that pointed out to Bill the whole allergy. So we have an allergy of the body, and the doctor's opinion is in the beginning of the big book. And it talks about the fact that we need to put down the food before we can work the steps. And so, and the steps that sobriety isn't enough. Just being sober, being abstinent is not enough. We have to work the steps. And one of the things, so Bill Wilson is the man that wrote that he and Dr. Bob started AA, and he wrote the big book. And in the first chapter is his story about how he was like so insane and down in the dumps and how he recovered. And
Five more minutes, Pat. Thank you.
one of the things that I'm always quoting to my sponsees, which is the people that I help now, that's what a sponsee is. On the bottom of page 13, Bill has been told about the original steps, and that's a whole different story. But it says, when my friend promised, when these things were done, that's working the steps, I would enter upon a new relation with my creator, and creator's in a capital C, that's what they use for spiritual things. That I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. And the statement that I have my sponsees highlight, belief in the power of God, if you're okay with calling it God, we don't care. God doesn't care what you call it. Call it George if you want, doesn't matter. Plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain and develop the new order of things were the essential requirements. These are what I always have to remember. Always, always, always to keep being willing to have an open mind. And I'm still learning so much about the vagaries of the disease and the way that the program works. Honesty, being honest with myself, mainly. We're not talking about cash register honesty. That goes without saying. We're talking about how honest we are with how controlling we are, and that's a whole different story. But also, I got 3 minutes, Suzanne. Thank you. And humility. I have to remember, I have not done this. I am just speaking God, that spirit. I'm okay with calling it God. Took me a long time, but now I'm okay with calling it God. God is speaking through me, using my brain to form the words and the vocal cords to speak them, and my hands to do the work, because that's what I am. I'm God's instrument, and that's all I am. And I need to know I have not done this. The other thing that is a warning on the bottom of page 14, for if an alcoholic or compulsive eater fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And this is so true. And the spiritual life through work, that means working the steps. And self-sacrificing means sacrificing my self-centeredness and getting myself out of the way, because I've had lots of trials and low spots, but you know, I have survived. And not only that, I have thrived. And I'm so grateful for this program. And with that, I will thank you and I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Pat. Thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope.